Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Lior Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. I want to thank all of you who check out all the episodes every single week. Always love hearing from you in the comments section, telling me where you're listening from, questions, things you liked about the interview. Keep those coming. I'll keep reading and replying as often as possible. And if you're not a subscriber and you want to follow along, if this is your kind of thing, you like hearing about your favorite musicians, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And of course, you can find us at any of the major hotspots like Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Just type in Kyle Meredith With. We'll deliver new interviews to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday so you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover new ones and know what's happening in the music world. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I'm going to be talking with Mark Duplass. Now, of course, you know Mark Duplass as a great actor in some of our favorite series, as a director, as a filmmaker. Did you know that Mark Duplass is also a musician and was in a band signed to one of the greatest indie labels of all time, Polyvinyl Records? Yeah, in the early 2000s, Mark fronted the group Volcano I'm Still Excited. Now, this was a band around the dawning of the blog era, and they were sort of a part of that, but never really got their due, mostly to the fact that just as they were starting to take off, Mark decided to dive right in on the film and go whole hog making movies and everything. So he put it all in the background. But now Polyvinyl is releasing one of their records. In fact, not only do you get the original songs, but also a lot of stuff that's either been impossible to find through the years, like B-sides or some unreleased demo stuff. So Mark and I are going to go back in the history books and talk about all of this, making the choice to leave it all behind, being influenced by some great acts like Spoon, Guided by Voices, Death Cab for Cutie, as well as like Sean Colvin and Elliot Smith. And switching to the keyboards, Volcano I'm Still Excited, the thing that I guess was their hook was they weren't a guitar-fronted band, as so many were in that garage rock revival period of the early 2000s, but instead, Mark was playing keyboards a lot. I want to know how that changed his songwriting, coming from guitar himself, being, as he says, an overly earnest singer-songwriter in the 90s. But then taking this group to the level of success they did. They did chart on college radio on the CMJ charts, which was a very big deal back then. And coming from the classical world, he'd gone to music school, how he applied his classical knowledge to write indie rock, and we'll kind of dream about what a follow-up might have sounded like had the band continued. Now, Mark will also tell us that all of this history, it wasn't for nothing. He's actually used a lot of what he learned during this indie rock time to apply to his film career. And he's going to tell us about how exactly that's happened and the details on what that means. And especially here in the present, he's still involved with music in little ways. You know, one of his most recent shows been on HBO season 4, premiering in July, is called Room 104, which he wrote 5 songs for one episode with Mark Kozelek of Sun Kill Moon in mind. It's really interesting. And of course, I'm going to ask about another one of his musical buddies, John Lajoie from The League. The League was definitely the first time I became aware of Mark Duplass back in the 2000s. And John, who played Taco on The League, has had his own music career. So could there ever be a collaboration on that front as well? Well, it's actually possible. And Mark's going to tell us about that as well. So let's jump into this. It's Kyle Meredith with Mark Duplass.
Oh,
Well, first off, this is really, really fun because obviously we've all come to know you as filmmaker, as actor, as director and everything, but you have this shady past as a musician that maybe has always sort of been hinted at, but now we're getting the full story once again for those of us who wasn't privy to it the first time around. You were in a band, Volcano, I'm Still Excited, and this was in the early 2000s to what, 2004?
Yeah, about 2004 is when things went south from there. So,
although, as I read, you know, it has been fun to hear you talk about this because, and I even think in one interview you use kind of this sliding doors reference there too, because it wasn't like the usual band story where everybody falls out and, you know, it's just going horrible. Like this was sort of a choice you made, right?
It was, yes. When bands normally implode, I think it implies that the success changed them, and we didn't achieve that level of success. So we were fine. What it was for me, honestly, was, you know, I was like 26 or maybe 27 at the time, and I was starting to develop my filmmaking career with my brother. I was really close with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, and I was just starting to feel like this lifestyle of like splitting $137 a night between 3 stinky dudes in a van might destroy me and might not allow me to do a lot of the things I want to do, and filmmaking was offering me that to a large extent. And so it was a choice to kind of leave that behind. And it was ultimately, I think, a really good choice. But I, as you mentioned, like Mo is dropping little subtle, maybe slightly desperate hints at my past so that people will recognize it. And it is, because there is a little part of me that is still there.
And so now we do get to relive that with this proper release or re-release, if you want to call it that, of the Volcano I'm Still Excited album. So now that it's out there, now that you've really had to spend time with this, has that experience been notable? Has it been, you know, what's it been like to really have to dive back into that part for you?
Well, it's super fun, you know, because I have this thing where I love reading novelists' first novels. Like if I read somebody's book and it's like their fifth book, and I'm like, oh, I got to read their first book because I see who they are now, but I want to see where they came from, and I want to see what they were like when they were still figuring themselves out, warts and all. And when you listen to the Carbon Copy EP, you can hear us creating Volcano I'm Still Excited while we're recording it, and we're still figuring ourselves out. And there's a folly and an idiocy to it that I just really, really love. And I think that, you know, sharing that with the world can be like a kind of a vulnerable thing for some people, where it's like, oh, I'd rather show them my best stuff. And this one is kind of like a hodgepodge collage of who I was as an artist when I was 23, 24 years old, trying to figure out, you know, what I wanted to be. And you'll hear all these things in there. You'll be like, oh, I know he was listening to Spoon there. Oh, there's the Guided by Voices. There's the Magnetic Fields. There's the Death Cab. You know, you'll hear all that on the record before it ultimately, it did coalesce on our self-titled record we did for Polyvinyl. But this one is really kind of the Naked Baby photos.
That's a Ben Folds 5 reference there, maybe, if you know that.
Yes, yeah, it absolutely is. I love that record. Yeah.
That's a deep reference, actually, for Ben Folds 5. Yeah. That's a B-sides thing. It's interesting that you name those bands, too, Spoon and Guided by Voices, Death Cab. Aside maybe from Guided by Voices, you know, Death Cab and Spoon were very much of the same time as this. And I started thinking about, you know, and a lot of songwriters, they're writing their music and everything, and you had been doing it for a little while, but you can hear, most of the time, you can hear the coming of age artists for that musician. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing for you, like, your coming of age years would have been what, like 91, 92, something around there for music?
Yeah, so, you know, I was born in at the end of 76, so I had a really interesting, like, career trajectory. Like, I grew up in New Orleans in the suburbs, and, like, so a lot of my influences were not very indie rock based. Like, I was more of a jazz and a classical musician fan, and then I got really, really into Ernest singer-songwriters and what that scene was in, like, the, you know, the mid to late 90s from the cleaner stuff, you know, of like, you know, even people like Sean Colvin and stuff like that, to Elliott Smith and what he was doing. And that is how I made my way into what lo-fi meant and what it meant to be, ideally at the same time, goofy and ironic, but also sincere, which was what the whole thrust of Volcano I'm Still Excited was, to achieve goofy earnestness, which is, it seems like they're at odds, but actually I think that they are the same thing in a lot of ways. So yeah, those are a lot of my influences. And I remember when we came out as a band, you know, Mates of State was on the Polyvinyl label, and I was thinking, God, I hope I can one day like get to go out on tour with those guys and things like that. And ultimately those bands were never our peers because we just weren't popular enough. But funny enough that, like, as soon as I became a filmmaker, I was able to go back to those bands and beg them to allow me to put their songs in my movies, and got to be friends with all of them in that way. So it kind of came around full circle.
With the type of music then that you're talking about, you had come from guitar, and I think there was a bit of a medical thing that went for the reason why you switched to piano and organ, right?
Yeah. It was really just like years of stress and intensity, and, you know, coming from the place I came from, which was no connections to the music industry, really no business being there. My whole ethos was like, well, if you're going to make it there, you're going to have to destroy yourself, you know? And that was useful, but not healthy. and so I ended up developing these repetitive stress injuries, and I had to find a new instrument to play. So Volcano I'm Still Excited was not only birthed out of sort of learning how to pivot from what your initial passion is into, well, if that doesn't work out, what can you do? Which at the time was, oh, I can play this little Casio keyboard that doesn't hurt my arms. And it ended up being like probably the most important life lesson I've learned in terms of creative process, which is like something I always call use the sword in your hand. Like, don't dream about the things you want to make when you one day get the money or the skills or the instrument or whatever. Swing whatever you have around you and swing it wildly. And I've really taken that and applied it to my film career. I've applied so much, honestly, to my film career from indie rock, even down to like when I make deals now to do my shows for HBO and Netflix and things. They're always trying to make deals with me, and I'm like, no, guys, don't worry about it. Look, we'll put in the work. You give us a little bit of cash, we'll split it 50-50. And they're like, where do you get these deals from? You know, I'm like, it's indie rock, it's Polyvinyl. Come on, this is what we did.
Do you remember though when you switched over, when you started playing keys instead, how did it automatically change the way you also approached a song, the way you would write a song?
Yeah, 100%. It was a tectonic shift for me, because my singer-songwriter career was based upon, well, I know 7 or 8 chords and that's good enough. But ultimately what happens is you run out of songs because you don't really know the form. And so I went to music school at the City College in Harlem, and I studied composition and arranging, and sort of opened up my purview into all those things that I think I sort of implicitly understood as like a fan of jazz and classical, but I learned those skills. So I was now approaching songwriting by not only using the keyboard, which was a different instrument, but with a whole new set of skills, which it's really interesting as a songwriter. When you learn the circle of fifths and you learn and truly understand how music works, there is a death of the idiot in you who used to be able to fumble into songs without knowing how. But there is a birth of this person who consistently knows how to get you out of corners and trouble spots because you have all those skills. And so that happened to me as I entered the whole volcano realm.
And you can hear that in the songs. Second Gun, I mean, there are so many fun chances that happen with the changes in that. I mean, it feels like that's really the classical side comes in on that.
It is. It's a really funky song that like starts out and you're like, okay, here we are. We're in 1-4-5. Wait, flat 6, flat 7. What are we? You know, and it's all these different chords. And that was me dorking out and flexing my music school skills because I was so excited about it. And Byron, who was my guitar player in the band, really helped to identify it. He was, even though we were young, he was much further downstream as an artist who understood the creative process than I was at the time. And he really was like, yes, take these big sort of erudite music school ideas that are fancy and hoity-toity, and let's just trash them with lo-fi instruments and Casios and old kick drums and fuzzy guitars. And that combination will make it really cool. And I thought that was ultimately the crack that made whatever Volcano was worth. He found that, you know.
Well, it's also got to be a challenge too, because you're still working in pop constructs to some degree, and to mm-hmm. not just throw the kitchen sink in with stuff that you're learning like that. I mean, at some point, somebody's got to pull back and it's like, but you still want to sing along to it.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, we would say, okay, here we go. We're gonna do a song in rounds here, and we're going to steal this thing from Bach, but let's just make the melody 3 or 4 notes so that it fits in. And yes, there's definitely an element of it to that. And, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but what I love about this Carbon Copy EP is like, it's got the 5 songs that we initially released, but it's got another 5 songs, which are demo versions of those songs. So you can really hear us trying to figure out what worked. And I dare say, what I love about it is we didn't quite find it on that thing, and it makes it just really fun to listen to, because you know we're bouncing around on the trampoline but hadn't figured out how to land it yet.
Still though, there's some pretty shining moments. You know, looking back on it now, and just from statistical points of view, I mean, it looks like In Green was always the bigger song, but mm-hmm. New Brad, to me, like New Brad, I hear it and that could have been a hit, should have been a hit.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said that, because there's this lore around Polyvinyl of like, we're one of their most underrated bands, and it's such a bummer that we didn't get more attention and more airplay or what could have happened. And I do think to a certain degree, some of those songs, like you said, In Green and New Brad, they could have maybe, there's enough Jimmy Eat World in there, they could have crossed over, you know? But to me, I never thought that way. The fact that we charted at all on college radio blew my mind. Mm-hmm. The fact that we had a record deal with Polyvinyl Records I almost viewed us as like first generation immigrants into the art world, where none of our parents did this stuff. We had no idea what we were doing. I had the feeling of, I'm just going to get my foot in the door and do as much as I can and hopefully provide opportunity for my kids, which is that classic mentality. And so I never really had any like bad taste in my mouth of, oh man, we didn't get our due, that could have been bigger. I really was in the place of just like, I can't believe we got this far.
But you did chart on CMJ, and that was before Polyvinyl. How did that happen for you all? I mean,
that was so crazy. It was Daniel Gill, who's a friend of ours.
No, Daniel.
Yeah, so he ran Fanatic Promotion back in the day, and luckily I knew him through a friend of a friend, and he gave us the down and dirty cheapest rate. And the initial Carbon Copy EP, I mean, we're calling this a re-release, but there basically was no release. We like pressed 500 copies and maybe gave away 490 of them, you know. He said, let me send this out to college radio, I think you got a chance. But he also said, you did yourself a real disservice by just making a sleeve out of it, because it's going to disappear in the stacks. You needed that jewel case so they could see it. But he said, you know, but you got 2 songs on here that might work, so let's try it. And we sent it out, and sure enough, it charted, and he was really instrumental in that. So we owe him a ton.
Yeah, I'm just remembering that it was 04, which was the last time I was in a band, and we sent a CD out in a sleeve, and it mm-hmm. got lost. and no one heard it.
Man, I think Daniel really helped us. He had a lot of credibility then. People really appreciated his taste. He was. I remember when Daniel was really helping to break Sufjan Stevens out at the same time. Mm. I mean, Daniel did a lot for the scene.
And I'm just realizing that some college kid said, I can only pick one sleeve, and they picked yours instead of mine.
Yeah, so that's... exactly, yeah.
Do you have a sensation, a feeling at all of what the next record could have sounded like?
Yeah, you know, I do, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. I didn't understand this at the time. I hadn't been to therapy. I didn't understand myself. Not many 26-year-old indie rockers are emotionally evolved in any way. It's part of the process. But I think what happened is I ran out of songs for that instrumentation, and we were banging our heads against the wall trying to jam more songs into this thing. But the truth is, you know, with three instruments and what we were doing, you know, we had kind of tapped the best stuff. And so the next record would inherently have involved me realizing this is not going to work here. We're going to have to pivot. We're going to have to find another way to reduce this thing and reinvent ourselves. And I think tonally, in terms of what we were going after, we were just scratching the surface of what that goofy earnestness could have been, of how to at once pump your fist with glee while also knowing that you look and sound ridiculous doing it, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be celebrated anyway. That would have been the cornerstone of the band, and that would have stuck. But I think sonically, it would have been would have had to have changed to find something new,
which was so different than, you know, the decade before, where goofy earnestness or pumping your fists, at least. I mean, everybody, we crossed our arms and we looked at the floor. You know,
yes,
you were told not to do that. It's good that you escaped that. I think
I was ready to be like, you know, loud and proud and kind of dorky and triumphant. And it's how I am as a person. And I just luckily was able to like find a way to start expressing that in this band.
It seems like that has, you have been able to blur those lines through the years. And the first thing to come to mind was like Animals, because there was so many musicians that were a part of that. Right.
I mean, yeah.
Is that the most obvious example of that, of being able to kind of reach back into the music world for you?
It is one of them, but there's some new stuff happening, which is my show Room 104 that I make for HBO, which is just an anthology series, different stories, different characters every night, set in a 400 square foot motel room, is born literally out of my indie rock ethos. Like, how do you make something out of nothing, right? And if you make it cheap enough, it doesn't have to be that successful for them to keep giving you another season. That's another secret. But I started writing musical episodes of that with my composer and my best friend, Julian Wass, who was actually back in the day part of a band called Folchen, and just a really beautiful dude that I love. And we both have let music go in a lot of ways in our life and have revisited it by writing musical episodes. And so this season of Room 104, which airs in July, I actually wrote an episode that I wanted Mark Kozelek to star in, because he and I have become friendly. And he's like, man, I can't do this. But it was about like a very dark singer-songwriter musician who had a hit EP in the early aughts, and then he disappears from the scene and nobody knows what happened to him until he shows up at this motel one night. And so I ended up writing all five of the songs for the fictional EP and for the show. So that's a good example of me being able to sort of take a hybrid approach to what I love about narrative film and storytelling, but also kind of incorporate my dormant, if I might use the metaphor, musical life.
So I got to ask then, if you wrote five of the songs, I mean, I don't know if you were writing in between or whatever, and maybe you were doing it just for fun and maybe you were not at all, but what are those songs like in comparison to what we've known from your past?
They're different, you know. They feel like, and as crazy as this sounds, like if they feel like if Sun Kill Moon never had an audience was feeling really, really upset about it, and also had a very complicated relationship with his mother. That's what it would feel like.
That sounds delightful. Delightful.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because in that degree, I mean, you are writing with, I'm guessing you were writing with Kozelek in mind. So it certainly gives you a direction, a trajectory for a song.
Yeah, it does. It was sort of a form that I was imagining. And then, you know, look, I, through the years, have been a fan of so many different kinds of music. And, I think that for me to start different bands at this stage in my life in order to play those songs that I might want to write is really not pragmatic and just doesn't really work for me. I have an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I like playing Risk and Clue with them at night. I don't want to go on tour. You know, I'm happy at home. But this idea that I can visit that world and make a character who plays those songs on an episode of TV, it's kind of like making a little musical life that is compartmentalized and practical for, you know, a 43-year-old homebody, which is what I am now.
Well, I hope that continues. I mean, I hope this certainly opens a door for you to kind of explore that a little bit more. I think that's
yeah, that's it's really fun. It's really fun to bring it back. And, you know, we're exploring a lot more different projects that use and combine narrative and music. And it's kind of like my two loves kind of coming together.
I'll quickly tie this back to one of those moments in the past with one of your other shows with The League, certainly where I, you know, first saw you. And Mr. Lajoie, who's also got his own music thing. Just saying, you planting a seed, if there's ever a duet to be had in there, I think we'd all be for that, especially after the tease you all put online the other day.
Yeah, well, look, John and I are really close. We're all still very close. We have dinner like, you know, well, not now, but, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, we all meet up and talk. And John has this like amazing career that's happening as a songwriter now, where not only is he making his own music with his project Wolfie's Just Fine, but he's also writing songs for like the Lego Movie and stuff.
Right.
And so he and I actually have talked quite a bit, and we always have way too many drinks and promise each other we're going to make some sort of vast musical project together. And we have not yet, but I am holding a little heat lamp in the back of my brain for that, because I think that it is something I would like to do.
That's awesome. I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
Just because you mentioned Room 104, is this the final season? Is that right?
This is the final season of Room 104. And like all final seasons, it's only the final season unless it's a massive success, in which case HBO will say, let's do another one. So I would love for anybody to make that happen for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, with that, so I'll go just against that for a second, because again, best of luck on all that. But finality isn't always a given. Like, you don't always get to see that that's something that you can pull off. And what I'm trying to do is smoothly tie this back around to Volcano. I'm still excited because there was something that just sort of had to go away, you know? So when you get those moments, like, I always appreciate those moments when you can see an end goal and you could go, okay, there's the stop. There's the hard stop, so I can move to the next thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and I like the way you put that, where there can be a perceived finality of that, which definitely felt that way when I left Volcano, I'm Still Excited behind. But as you get older, you start to realize you don't really ever truly leave something behind, and it can be a very long life. So yes, it has been 16 years since we have put out a Volcano, I'm Still Excited record. And it's been a long time, but I have to say it's sooner than I thought the next one would come out. So it's also fun.
Well, it's been fun to listen to it, Mark, and it's been a lot of fun to talk to you about this too. Hopefully it's not the last time that we can talk about music in some way or the other. I would love to do that with you again in the future. So, you know, keep us updated on any opportunities for that.
Sounds like a plan. Also want to give a quick shout out to the Louisville film scene. There's a lot of great independent filmmakers there gathering up steam. It almost feels like a little baby Austin, and some good leaders in your community. So I just want to encourage everybody there to keep building that thing, and we're rooting you on.
That's awesome. Thank you. I know a lot of those people out there. I didn't get to bring it up, but you said Volcano played some shows here too, right?
Yeah, we played 2 shows there. They were both amazing shows, which for us means there was more than 13 people there, and they were excited to see us. And, you know, we had heard that. It wasn't a secret back then in the early aughts that this was a town in the relative area of the country where you could have a great show, where there weren't as many good shows to be had, like the Eastern Seaboard, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was always a spot that we looked forward to, and that a lot of other bands felt like, this is a bright spot as we're heading through the middle here to try and find, you know, where the great shows are. It was always a target.
Yeah. Well, we're all looking forward to when we can get back into some of those shows too. That's
absolutely
on the way. Mark, thank you so much again for taking the time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Cheers, Kyle. Talk soon.
All right. Take care. Bye. And my thanks, Mark Duplass, Volcano, I'm Still Excited, the re-release or a first official release, whatever you want to call it. Do check that out. Thanks to Mark, and thanks to you for checking out this episode. Again, if you're not already a subscriber and you dug what you heard on this edition right here, I do hope you hit that subscribe button. Again, you can find us at any of the major spots like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts from. Just type in Kyle Meredith With. We'll send you new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday so you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover new ones and know what's happening in the music world as well. And then after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews as well. Again, that's WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound, they've got your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the major social media spots at Kyle Meredith. Hope you follow and like in the appropriate spots there as well. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
But I like knowing that you're in the closet looking like that. I'm very happy now that we have this connection. So
now that we've done that.
Let's kick ass, Kyle.
Right,
come on.
Let's do it.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.